Health systems are naturally very complicated organizations. This week, my guest helps explain how they operate. Dr. Lloyd is the Chief Medical Officer for Reliable Health at Texas Health Resources. He is tasked with standardizing care across a complicated health system. On this episode, you'll learn how they go about standardizing care, some exciting trends in healthcare, and more. If you enjoyed this episode, share with a friend. Thanks.
Matt McGee is an employee of Frost Insurance. All opinions shared by Matt or guests of the Healthy Conversations podcast are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of Frost Insurance or Frost Bank. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for insurance, banking, or investment advice. Healthy Conversations with Matt McGee is brought to you by Straight Up Podcasts.
Dr. Lloyd, I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right, let's kick things off. I'm really interested to hear kind of what led you into healthcare and how you ended up here at THR.
Sure. I actually entered healthcare later in life, unlike most physicians who go straight through in school. So I spent 9 years in the Air Force working on airplanes and traveling around the world before I actually decided to do that. And I was actually skiing in California, where I was stationed, coming back from the slopes. And there was a major car accident. And because of our training in the Air Force around first aid and all that, we stopped and rendered aid. And that, I think that was a turning point for me then when I realized, you know, there would be something, or there could be something that's much better than working on airplanes and such, more personally gratifying. And I started to think of medicine again, as I had when I was younger, because my mother was in healthcare. And I think something within me changed after that experience. So when I left the military, though, I decided, well, in order to be a physician, most people go straight through, and that's not really an option. And I set my sights on engineering. And when I took my first drafting class as a freshman, I couldn't draw stick people. And so
that makes it difficult.
Sure. So I revisited it after seeing a documentary on 60 Minutes of a woman that was 53 years old graduating from medical school. And I thought, you know what, this might be a possibility. Yeah. And so that's when I changed my major. And I guess the rest is history.
Very nice. I think, so you're a chief medical officer here at THR and Reliable Health.
That's correct.
Can you provide some context of what exactly a chief medical officer does for somebody that maybe has heard the term, but not really sure what exactly a job like that entails?
Sure. Well, chief medical officer is typically, it is an executive position, and it's filled by a physician, someone with medical background. But it's typically the senior physician executive in any particular organization. So Texas Health Resources has chief medical officers for all of our hospital entities.
Gotcha.
And we have a chief medical officer over our physician group. And I've been the chief medical officer at Texas Health HEB in Bedford for the last year and a half, or for a year and a half before I stepped into this role at System Services. So currently, I'm the interim chief medical officer over Reliable Health.
Okay. And I mean, you provided a little context there. So there's regional hospitals where there's a chief medical officer at each one, and then somebody above all of them. Can you provide some context on Reliable Health and what you guys are working on there?
Sure, sure. So first of all, Reliable Health is not really a department of our hospital. It's a capability that Texas Health Resources has embraced. And this actually started back in 2014 when we looked at how do we become more reliable? How do we leverage best practices to provide the same experience when patients come into any of our entities?
Yeah, I mean, that makes total sense. And so you're really focused on standardizing care and, I guess, creating a more reliable process within THR. Can you go into some details there of what that looks like? I know that's probably a very complicated undertaking. So, I mean, any context for, call it a CFO, that wants to understand THR, how you guys are set up, I think it'd be very interesting. How you guys think of standardizing care.
Sure, sure. So I'll start with the standardizing care, and then maybe we can talk a little bit about the structure and how we got there after that. In terms of standardizing care, what we looked at, and I erroneously said 2014, it was 2016 when we implemented our reliable care blueprinting, which was an approach to care design that THR embraced. And so what this focuses on is a reliable quality experience with every single encounter across the system. And so this runs through nursing and it runs through our physicians. And it is really everyone agreeing on the best way to manage certain conditions. So we have modules around things like preventing blood clots in patients who are in the hospital. So how do we do that? How do we assess for that? And how do we do it the same every time so that we're not just saying it, but we're reducing the risk of that actually happening to one of our patients in the hospital.
That's awesome. I mean, just given the, I guess, vast scale of it, was it difficult to get buy-in across, I guess, different specialties for these, call it reliable systems, or was that something that everybody's totally gung-ho for?
More so now than they were at the beginning. As with any change that comes through, there's always explaining the why, and you have the early adopters and the late adopters and sometimes the never adopters. But standardization in medicine is something that's not new. In fact, medical literature itself is a standardization. When you talk about doing a study, really that study is saying that in this patient population, this is the best way to manage this particular condition. Physicians are trained to take that and interpret it and apply it to their individual patients. And so a lot of times with physicians, there's a little bit of a cultural bias behind, I want to do things the way I interpret them out of the literature. They feel like standardization in a way might be an abdication of their role in doing that. But as we talk through this more and more, we understand that every single patient doesn't apply to every single standardization, but the role of the physicians in helping us design this is, where does this make sense?
Mm-hmm.
What does the medical literature show? How should we be doing this? And then you add to that the complexity of keeping up with medical literature. By 2020, it's estimated that the amount of medical literature available will double every 3 months. And so you think about the information, trying to keep up with that, it's impossible. Now, that doesn't mean that all the foundational stuff will change that often.
Yeah.
A lot of that will stay as a constant, but there's a lot of stuff that people in healthcare need to try to interpret and try to parse down. And so reliable health in a lot of ways helps them do that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, given the amount of information that's now available and becoming available, like how much time do doctors spend on, I guess, researching that? I think as a patient and as a consumer myself, we don't ever see any of the education. I mean, you go see your doctor and you have that 30-minute appointment. I mean, I guess how much is like a general doctor, how much time does a general doctor spend on, I guess, continuing education and staying up with all this literature and technology available?
Sure. Well, the short answer is almost never enough.
Yeah.
Especially if you're practicing, you always believe that that's a struggle. The state of Texas mandates 24 hours a year.
Okay.
That you do in continuing medical education. Different states have varying requirements.
Yeah.
But if you're only doing that, you're really not doing enough. Keeping up with what we should be doing, and it takes a lot more than 24 hours.
Yeah, I can absolutely see that. I'm curious, what are some of the biggest challenges now that you're a couple years into reliable and standardizing care, now that you've got probably some buy-in across the board? What are, I guess, the biggest challenges over the next few years on that front?
Well, surprisingly, when I stepped into this role, one of the biggest challenges is managing the energy around doing this. I was surprised at the amount of buy-in that we have from a number of our physicians. And so it's really coordinating the various ideas and taking this energy and trying to focus it and get everyone sort of going in the same direction. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah, absolutely. So you spent a couple years at an insurance company as a medical director.
I did.
How did that help shape I guess, your experiences and perspectives that you're kind of now implementing standardizing care and working more on the provider and working for a giant healthcare system.
Sure. Well, my background prior to that was being an internal medicine hospitalist physician. Yeah. And so really my exposure to taking care of patients was confined to being an inpatient, being a hospital doctor. Mm-hmm. And what we would do is treat them and get them as well as we could, and then quote unquote, throw them over the wall and discharge them and hope everything went well. Really working at Care and Care and working on the payer side was the first time I was able to look at it from a high level and mm-hmm. see the whole patient experience across the continuum. Yeah. And so this is the doctor's office, the specialist's office. If they went into the hospital, it's that experience. If they needed post-acute, it's that experience. And then all the way back to the primary care physician. And then what are the psychosocial determinants of health that we don't even talk about, or we didn't then? We talk about it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And how does this all fit together? And being a medical director for care management really gives you exposure to the entire continuum of care. And that was my first experience with that.
Very cool. So healthcare costs are obviously a huge conversation topic in my world, as well as in the political sphere with the upcoming election. How does Texas Health think about kind of the overall cost of care and
That's a great area. It's a great question. And it is a big focus for us right now, because we have to find a way to make care more affordable for a number of reasons. There are economic reasons. 18% mm-hmm. of GDP
yeah, it's huge.
Is one, but also the burden on our patients, because cost in a lot of cases has become a barrier to people getting the care that they need. And so it becomes a quality issue. When you talk about that. So we are looking for ways to make ourselves more efficient, make better use of our resources, and reduce the cost of care. And it's exciting, because that's not a conversation that's been had in healthcare, I think, nearly enough, but you hear a lot about it now.
Yeah. Very nice. So there's the Texas Health Aetna, which is kind of blending the insurance as well as the provider perspective. How has that experience gone from a CMO, from a medical perspective?
Well, very similar to the Care and Care mm-hmm. Population, although it's a different patient population. The Aetna is a commercial population as opposed to Medicare Advantage, which is where I came from. But in terms of a system, it makes a lot of sense. More and more healthcare systems are going to, or should, incur upside and downside risk in managing patient populations. Downside risk is a great way for us to hold ourselves accountable for the cost of care, and so that we're not just talking about it, but we're accountable for it.
Yeah, makes total sense. So I've asked a number of different guests this question, as well as you've alluded to it from the price transparency perspective. What advice or resources would you give an employer or employee that might listen to this, of how to be a better consumer of the services you offer?
Well, first of all, I would say think of it as a partnership. People who engage with us, however they engage with us, look for ways that we can be mutually beneficial to each other. And so if you're talking about an employer using us, for example, then have a conversation about how can we get together and best manage this cohort of people together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, how would you recommend they go about doing that? I mean, should they be going through their broker, or should they be going through directly reaching out to resources available at a THR?
I would do both.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
And ask the question at the time. You know, here's our
problem.
Our group of employees. Here are our struggles. How can we address these together? How can we work together?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's along the lines of direct contracting and mm-hmm. just going to the actual provider. So that makes total sense.
Yeah. I think it needs to be more than transactional.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know. How does the culture and the mission here at THR help really drive performance for an organization this size and complexity?
Well, our culture prizes people. and it revolves around our people. It always has. There are, it's the largest part of our organization, and it's obviously our most important asset. We talk about the Texas Health Promise, which is individuals caring for individuals together. And from this promise, we've built a very robust system of promise behaviors, such as I promise to demonstrate and promote teamwork. And so that's, I think that's how we drive our outcomes.
Yeah.
That we've seen. We are consistently named as one of the best companies in America to work for, not only in healthcare, but across all industries.
Yeah, very cool. What are some of the, I'm curious, what are some of the trends that really excite you within healthcare? I know you've had a very diverse experience within healthcare, so I think you have, I guess, your hand on the pulse for the future of healthcare. So I'd be very interested to hear what trends really excite you.
Sure. I think becoming consumer-centric is very exciting, and that's what we're doing at Texas Health Resources. So it's really focusing on the consumer, and consumer in a lot of ways has been an unpopular word amongst clinicians. They know they're not consumers, they're patients.
Yeah.
But people who are consuming healthcare are more and more having an expectation that they are treated like a consumer, and that it's not that we do what we've done and build a great healthcare system that serves people in healthcare, but not really consumers.
Yeah.
So why is it that if I need to get in touch or get an appointment with my physician, that I have to dial in and get a phone tree and navigate all of that, and maybe someone will call me back later today? Why can't I do it the same way I get a haircut or whatever else and just go on my phone and set an appointment? It's just an example. Why can't we communicate with each other asynchronously? Through something like text messaging.
I mean, it makes total sense.
Utilize this and do what other industries are doing in this space, in the consumer space. I think that's very exciting.
Yeah, that's great to hear that you guys are on top of that. So, I mean, there's been tremendous consolidation within healthcare over the years. You've been at THR in a number of different roles. What has that experience been like from a CMO's perspective?
Well, so we have grown substantially since I started as a hospitalist in 2003.
Okay.
And at what was then Harris Methodist Fort Worth. And so like any company, it has its growing pains, but I think what we've been able to do is develop a culture of breaking down silos and moving beyond this is the culture of this particular entity versus this one before we were all brought together.
Mm-hmm.
And think about what is the best of everything that we can combine. And I believe the leadership at Texas Health Resources has been very successful at doing that long before I even moved into a leadership role.
Yeah, that's great to hear. That's got to be a very difficult undertaking given the many silos and personalities and just general complexities of healthcare in general. So if you could change one thing in healthcare, what would you like to change?
I would say, in a nutshell, administrative burden, which sounds kind of odd coming from an administrator.
Yeah. Yeah. So, can you explain that?
In particular, our physicians have to spend an extraordinary amount of time doing documentation and signing various forms. And it really drives dissatisfaction amongst them. Long ago when the medical record started, it was really something where you wrote down what's going on with the patient so that either you at a later time or another physician could read that and say, okay, that's what's going on. And then when the medical legal world came around and started using charts in court, then it became a legal document where you have to document not only what's going on with the patient, but you have to make sure that it has all the legal requirements so that you're showing that you're doing the right thing by the patient. And then at some point it became a coding document. And so all of these things are built into our documentation and they're not always adding value.
Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't realize that. So doctors, even in a large health system like THR, are still doing a ton of that admin just based on how it's set up is what it sounds like.
Sure. And it's not really coming from a THR.
Yeah,
as
absolutely.
Much as it is,
yeah,
the federal government requires these things be documented.
Yeah.
And then in order to control costs, a lot of insurance companies, most insurance companies, and CMS
coding,
require
claims,
that, okay, if you're going to have this, it has to be signed by a physician. That's the only way you can do it. And so that results in a pile of things on the physician's desk at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so many like primary care physicians that I know will spend all day in their clinic. And once the last patient leaves, they're there another 2 or 3 hours into the evening, just signing paperwork and just filling out forms that have to be filled out. And that's what if I could change anything in healthcare, it would be to make that go away.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like a great thing to change. And it seems to be why things like direct primary care and more of a subscription, getting away from insurance altogether, at least in the primary care, it probably eliminates at least some of that paperwork. I'm sure there's still plenty that has to be done.
Sure.
But all right. Well, that's really the bulk of the questions. I had a couple easy questions to wrap up with, but I would be interested to see, I mean, you're in an executive role tasked with standardizing care and endlessly complex. I mean, how do you think about where you focus your time?
So there was a video recently that was that went viral that had Warren Buffett and Bill Gates. And Warren Buffett was talking about, in a sense, the video was entitled Busy is the New Stupid.
Yeah.
And the crux of it was that too many executives fill their calendar with meetings and activities all day, and they don't take any time to sit and think. And so since moving into this role, I've been very intentional about putting blocks of time in my calendar saying I'm going to work on thinking or work on strategy or figure out how we're going to solve a particular problem or prepare for a podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you coming on, by the way. I mean, along the same lines, have you been reading or listening anything good that you would recommend?
A really good book that I read a few years ago, and it's written, I like this because it's written from the consumer perspective.
Okay.
It's called An American Sickness, and it's by Elizabeth Rosenthal, who is a physician, medical executive at Harvard. And really, this talks about a lot of things that are wrong with healthcare, with the reimbursement system, with essentially the patient experience, a lot of what we're talking about. I mean, in a way, it has the typical East Coast, I think, bias against corporations, which may be appropriate sometimes. but I think it really lays out all of the problems in all of the different areas, and no one is immune no one is above criticism for what we have right now in healthcare. And I think it's a good starting point, at least, to try to understand some of this.
I will take a look at that. We can wrap up with this one. I typically ask this question at the very end, so this is perfect. What is something you believe in that few others do?
Sure. Most people don't believe that the healthcare industry can succeed in bringing down cost, improving accessibility, and improving the quality of care. I believe we can. I don't think it'll be easy by any means, but I think it's within reach.
Yeah. And do you think that's going to be done? I mean, it's probably, you got to attack a problem like that from a lot of different directions, but I mean, focusing on the consumer and some of the technology things that you guys are doing, is that part of it, I assume?
It's all part of it.
Yeah.
How can we embrace technology and really think about the consumer experience? So that has to run through everything we do, is what are our consumers experiencing? Like I said earlier, we built a great healthcare system for people in healthcare, but not for the people who consume it.
Yeah, that is a perfect way to end it. Dr. Lloyd, I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. It's Matt. Thanks again for tuning into Healthy Conversations. If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe to the show on iTunes, leave a 5-star rating, or write a quick review. If you really loved it, share the episode on social media. It really helps our iTunes ranking. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.